Hi there, I'm Melinda Barefoot, mother of Christian Barefoot. I am 51 years old, and I am recording this interview in Atlanta, Georgia, on Monday, January 4th, 2021.
Can you tell me about your background?
I would love to tell you about my background. I was born in 1969 in Southern California. I have a twin brother, as you know, so I was born 2 minutes behind him. And I was the youngest of four kids. My mother and father had another set of twins 5.5 years before they had my brother and me. So I grew up in a rather large household and attended small schools most of my life until I got to college. Graduated from an all-girl high school in 1987 and decided to pursue a degree in history at the University of California at Santa Barbara. In between my sophomore and junior year, I studied a semester abroad in Edinburgh, Scotland, which was a fantastic experience. And that helped me become a lot more independent at the age of 20 because I'd grown up in a smaller environment, smaller schools, and I needed to become pretty autonomous for 3 months going to school overseas. So I graduated college in 1991 and worked in Washington, D.C. for 6 months. That was a great experience. I was back there with some friends and then came back to California and pursued corporate marketing jobs and did that for the next 6 years of my life, working for a law firm in the marketing department. I worked for the Los Angeles Dodgers in their marketing department and eventually wound up at the Walt Disney Company working in their marketing department. Before leaving California at the age of 28, moving to Dallas, Texas to take a job at the Wall Street Journal in sales and marketing, and stayed in Dallas, Texas for the next 20 years where I met your dad. And we had two boys, which were the highlights of my life. And we moved here to Atlanta, Georgia 3.5 years ago.
What's the first memory you have of a major current event of your childhood?
That's a great question. I would definitely say when I was 11 years old, the president at that time was Jimmy Carter. And we had had 50 American hostages taken over in Iran. And our teachers came to school and told us about how American hostages were being kept against their will. And we had a teacher whose husband was in the military at the time. And he made these silver bracelets for us that said, "Remember the American hostages." We all wore these bracelets, and after 444 days, and Ronald Reagan was inaugurated into office, January of 1981, the 50 hostages in Iran were released that day. And we had a big party at our school and did a parade with red, white, and blue streamers and the American flag, because we're flying everywhere. And that was a memory that's really stuck with me. As far as patriotism and as far as trusting world leaders and realizing that our country was on the brink of war at that time. So that's a memory that definitely stood out to me, current event. And it also ignited my interest in not just what's going on domestically, but what's going on internationally in the world and how important it is to stay afloat on what's happening and educate yourself on the issues and realize that's also something that's important to teach your children. Because as the saying goes, ignorance is bliss. You can bury your head in the sand and do nothing, or you can be informed and form opinions and realize the importance of helping others.
Can you tell me about a person who has been the kindest to you in your life?
Hands down, the kindest person I've ever met in my life is your father, Brooke. And I was definitely considered an older bride. I married your dad when I was 32 years old, and that was my first marriage. But he is an individual who exudes kindness on a daily basis. He never, it's very seldom you see him become angry, and he just epitomizes goodness. He's very positive, he's supportive, he encourages me, he encourages you and your brother, he encourages family members, friends, coworkers. And when I met him, I knew that we had similar values in common, things that were really important to us, and he's done community service work his entire life, and he will continue to do it until the day he dies, because that's something that's the backbone of who he is and how he wants to give to others. And before it became popular to become grateful for everything, he's been grateful his entire life for what he's been given. He's also got the best work ethic I've ever known, which you also can relate to. He probably works anywhere between 80 to 90 hours a week and started working full-time in high school. And did so well academically in high school, he was offered 3 college scholarships to 3 different universities, and put himself through SMU as a civil engineering major, worked construction during the day, and would go to class at night for 5 years to get that degree before graduating. But as far as the kindest person, he definitely is the epitome of what goodness and kindness, compassion are.
Okay, can you please tell me about one of your happiest memories in the second half of your life?
Oh, that's a great question. So the second half of my life would be when I was 25 and a half years old. So definitely the happiest memory was the day I became a mom, which was the day you were born, October 18th, 2002, because that's something that was my biggest dream or my biggest goal was to become a mother. So the day you were born, October 18th, 2002, and the day your brother was born, February 6th, 2005, were the happiest days in the second half of my life. But I've had many happy memories. So becoming a mother made that dream a reality. And of course, my wedding day was such a happy memory. I would also say the day I graduated with a master's degree, December of 2016, was a really happy, it's just a fulfilling, rewarding experience.
Who is someone who's had a big influence on your life, and what lessons did that person teach you?
The person who's had the biggest impact on my life has been, besides my husband and my children, my mom. She's one of the kindest people anyone's ever met. And it was fun to have a mom like her growing up, because all my friends wanted to hang out at our house. So we were kind of the Kool-Aid house, in the sense that the neighborhood kids were in our house. My mom's never met a stranger. She's from West Texas, so she definitely practices that Southern hospitality, or it's just ingrained in her. So we had a revolving door at my house. We always had a lot of kids in the house. We had a lot of animals in the house. Anybody was welcome to stay for dinner. Anyone was welcome to spend the night. And growing up in an all-Jewish neighborhood, we were the one Christian family on our block. And she would pile as many kids as she could get into that station wagon on Sunday morning to take us all to Sunday school. So lessons that she taught me were kindness at a very young age, and how sometimes the hardest people to love are the ones who need love the most. She taught me the importance of holding people accountable for their actions and their bad behavior. And she taught me that the way you live your life may be the only Bible someone else is reading. So that made a real indentation on me as a person growing up. And I hope that I've carried that over into my life as a wife and as a mother and as a friend.
What do you feel most grateful for in your life?
Definitely, I feel the most grateful for my family, my two boys, and my husband, my parents, my siblings, and I have an amazing network of girlfriends who live in California, who live in Texas, who live in Georgia, New York, Illinois, Utah. I have friends all over the country, which is a complete blessing. And something that I've taken for granted my whole life has definitely been my health. And in the last year, I've had health issues consistently. Double mastectomy was performed in June, and there were major complications from that. Had to spend 8 days in the hospital after Thanksgiving this year with a staph infection in my abdomen that just about went the wrong way and almost shut down my organs, and that could have been fatal, but thankfully an infectious disease doctor caught that and I was able to come home, and I'm getting stronger every day. So that's something that I've taken for granted for 51 years, and I will never take my health for granted again. So 2020 has taught me that lesson, definitely. I'm also grateful for all the opportunities that I've been given, and I'm extremely grateful for the community of love and support we have around us and how our faith plays a really important role in our lives.
What is your favorite memory of me?
Gosh, I have so many memories of you. I cannot believe you're 18 years old. And I become very sentimental when I think about you leaving for college in 7 months. One of my favorite memories of you is, I can't just say one memory, but between preschool and eighth grade, you were never not playing a sport. You were playing football, you were playing baseball, you played basketball year round. You even played soccer when you were younger. So I think some of my favorite memories of you are seeing you on a baseball field, a football field, a basketball court, and how you have such an enthusiasm about the sport, and you're such an athlete, and how you encouraged your teammates, and you were always talking positively, and you were the cheerleader pumping someone up when they had made a mistake and cheering them on. Your high school years, my favorite memories, hands down, are these amazing young men that you have befriended. There's 14 or 15 of you guys. You are thick as thieves. And I literally get emotional when I think about how this move to Atlanta 3.5 years ago was a really critical time in your adolescent life. I mean, for you to start high school at not only a new high school, you were in a new state. You had moved out of state from Texas to Georgia, knowing nobody at Marist, and you had to start all over. And that was a real challenging first year for you. You missed your friends in Dallas, Texas, and you missed the familiarity, and you were thrown into a situation that was not your choice. But you handled it so well, and you matured immensely your freshman year of high school. Even watching you play football and join the wrestling team, those were two really grueling, challenging sports, and you did it and never complained. And your sophomore year, you were able to meet these young men who will be your friends for life. And they're so incredibly, it's a brotherhood you guys have. And that absolutely is the best thing about Marist, is the friendships you've developed and continue to cultivate. And you will be, these guys will be in your wedding someday. and maybe godfathers to your future children, because that's how tight that bond is.
Speaking of future children, what advice would you give me about raising my own kids?
Enjoy every day, because it goes so incredibly fast, as everybody says. For everything you tell your child they're doing wrong, tell them 3 to 4 things they're doing right. And unconditional love and support and encouragement is so imperative, because parenthood is difficult. There are days where it's so challenging, you think, I'm doing this all wrong. There's no book telling us how to do it right. And you realize that the way you become good at something is by practicing it. So you become much wiser as your kids get older, because you have control over some things, but you have very little control over the majority of things. So you teach them the difference between right and wrong. And rather than focusing on a failure, you use that to show them that that could be a life lesson, and just not to repeat the mistake. And then you definitely emphasize, I used to tell you and your brother every day when you went to school, 2 things, be kind to everyone and be a leader, not a follower.
Do you have any favorite stories from your work life?
I had some great stories when I was working in the world of marketing. Working for the Los Angeles Dodgers was so edifying in so many ways. A, because I love sports and I love baseball. But B, we had celebrities come to the stadium, and I was in charge of the group sales marketing. So we had David Letterman come to the stadium one time. I had to take him down on the field and give him a tour. A lot of people wouldn't know who David Letterman is, but I'm dating myself by telling you that. He was a famous talk show host for many, many years in New York. And I had Ken Burns come to the stadium. I had written my senior thesis on the Civil War before I graduated college, and so I'd used his documentary series, The Civil War, for a good portion of my senior thesis. So he was a really nice man. But we just had a lot of fun at Dodger Stadium when I worked there. And we had a lot of fun working at the Walt Disney Company. We were working anywhere between 80 to 90 hours a week, and for just ridiculous wages. It was a real sacrifice for almost 3 years of my life, but I learned so much. And it was fun to watch, to develop a concept and watch it come to life. We were the prototype of a product we'd done in the marketing department. So that was, I worked with great people at Disney.
Talk to me about your time in Edinburgh. Was there any other place that you were thinking of going, and are you happy that you ended up picking Edinburgh?
That's a great question. I was so happy I picked Edinburgh. I applied to Oxford University, Cambridge University, and Edinburgh, and I received the most scholarship money at Edinburgh. And my best friend Gretchen had applied, was going to come with me to Scotland, and diverted at the month before we left, and ended up going to Salamanca, Spain. So we met up after our semester of school and traveled around England together, but was definitely glad I did Scotland. We'd had 9 or 10 exchange students live with us while I was growing up. And we had 2 brothers who were from Scotland, Scott and Ron Gordon, and they stayed with us. Ron stayed with us 4 or 5 months, and Scott came and stayed with us for a couple months. I think it was the summer of 86. And so we developed a real friendship with not just Ron and Scott, but with their family who lived in the Highlands of Scotland, the northern section of Scotland. So when I attended Edinburgh University, they met me at the airport when I flew in to London, and we'd maintained that friendship for, 5 or 10 years, unfortunately we've lost touch with them because everybody goes different ways and life happens. But that was, I was really, really grateful that I took the opportunity to go abroad when I did. And I paid for it all by myself. Sold my car, got a scholarship, worked 3 or 4 jobs my freshman and sophomore year of college, and made it happen to go to Scotland.
How different is the lifestyle there and like the customs that they practice when compared to American style?
They were just seemed a lot more laid back than Americans, very friendly. The Scots, this was 1989, so they loved Americans at that point. They did not love the English. And because they felt like, you know, because they were part of the United Kingdom, they felt that the English were suppressing them and that they did not have the independence they wanted. They called Margaret Thatcher at the time, Margaret Thatcher, Milk Snatcher, because she cut off milk being delivered to all the elementary schools while she was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. So, or of England. So she, yeah, so they were much more devoted to their faith. And so it was a given that on Sundays, everybody attended church, very family oriented, but as I said, outgoing, friendly, a little bit more reserved, but not as friendly as the Irish, but almost as friendly as the Irish. So their customs were different than ours. I mean, they eat haggis, which is, you don't want to know what the haggis is. And they'd have chicken pot pies for breakfast. And so different menu items for sure.
Okay, and then last question, do you have any regrets?
I think my biggest regret at the age of 51, and this is a negative that turned into a positive, I decided to go back to graduate school when I was 44 years old. So you were in fifth grade, your brother was in third grade. And you grew up awfully fast because I would have to leave for school. I'd have to go to school 3 nights a week from 6 to 10. So I'd leave an hour before class started. And you started babysitting when you were 10 years old. I wish I had attended graduate school when I was in my 20s. But then I think about that and I was still living in California. So when I finished my 3 years of graduate school, I had a master's of education and community counseling and mental health. And I finished that in Texas. And then I graduated December 2016 and we moved 7 months later to Atlanta, Georgia. So I still have that master's degree, but instead of getting 2,000 hours to get licensed, become a licensed therapist here, a licensed professional counselor, I now need 3,000 hours. So I will eventually, when I'm healthy, find a practice that will hire me. And all the classes I took in Texas at the University of North Texas, where I finished my graduate work, I need to take one more ethics class, and then I need to go get 3,000 hours, and I'll have to retake the National Counseling Exam, which I took in October of 2016. But if you don't become licensed in the first 5 years, or 5 years after taking that exam, you have to take the exam again, and that's a 4.5-hour exam. So I will have to retake that October of 2021, and I'll do it. I've already had the good fortune of doing 1,000 hours of practicum work with clients, and I had to do 800 hours of internships before I graduated. I worked at the Family Place, which is the largest domestic violence center in the South. And then I worked at Nexus Recovery, which is an addiction center for women only. And that was one of the most edifying experiences I've had. So my biggest regret is I didn't go back and get a master's degree earlier than the age of 44. I wish I'd gone in my 30s, but I was a mom and I was working to help bring home a paycheck. And your dad went back and got an MBA. And so it ended up, the timing ended up being just right for our family at that time.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Mom.
That's right.